The Talmud tells us that the Pasuk says, Pasuk laments, Tzion ein doresh la, that there is no one seeking after, there is no one being doresh. You have to figure out exactly how to translate this word. There's no one seeking after Yerushalayim, after Tzion specifically. It says the Talmud, Miklal debay drisha. We see from there that we require that you do look after it, that you do seek after it. And the Talmud understands that in the context of the requirement to set up a Zecher LeMikdash. That when the Beis HaMikdash is no longer with us, or is currently not with us, so therefore we're obligated to remember it, we're obligated to set up for ourselves memorials in order to remind us of what was, and that's how we are encouraged to look back towards bringing it back. And that idea we could perhaps understand in a slightly different sense, that perhaps Tzion also requires drisha, requires us to darshan about it, requires us to look into the halachic aspects. And in that sense, I want to clarify the title. When I say some halachic perspectives, I don't necessarily mean in the sense of practical halachas relating to Yerushalayim, but I mean perspective that's informed by the halachic issues. That at this moment in history, besides the fact that it's Yom HaAtzmaut this week, but we know that the status of Yerushalayim and the integrity of Yerushalayim is very much an issue, and while it's not our place at all to look into matters of policy, but we can try to sensitize ourselves to an appreciation of what Yerushalayim is from a halachic perspective. And especially when we consider the question of modern-day Jerusalem, which is a term which really includes a far greater area than may historically represent Yerushalayim. So the question comes even more broadly, what is the status of that? What's the significance of that area? And any decisions that are being made in reference to Yerushalayim as a whole, again, it's not our place to make them, but we want to at least have as much of a sensitivity as possible to what's involved, to what is the status of Yerushalayim as a whole, both ancient Yerushalayim and the broader municipality known as Jerusalem. And to look at that a little bit from a halachic angle, that's what I'd like to do today. Just in, again, a very broad general sense, and again, hopefully to fulfill one sense of the word, miklal debay drisha, that we see that we have to be doresh, that we have to look into the concept of Tzion and of Yerushalayim. And it's often pointed out that while other faiths may lay claim to Jerusalem, one of the many points that emphasize and that show the connection of the Jewish people to Jerusalem is the many, many times that it's mentioned in Tanakh. More than 650 times in Tanakh we find reference to Yerushalayim, and none of those are in the Chumash. In the Chumash itself, the word Yerushalayim is never used, and the Rambam and Maror Nevuchim and other Rishonim have some of these ideas as well. The Rambam gives three reasons why that is. Three reasons why the specific identity of Yerushalayim was not revealed until later. Both as far as the word, but these explanations more go to the place itself. He writes there that on the one hand, we're afraid that if the nations of the world knew what the future held for this city, that they would do whatever they could to keep us out. We didn't want that to happen. They're also afraid that again, if they knew, then perhaps they would seek to either destroy the city or turn it into a place of Avodah Zarah. And as far as the Jews themselves are concerned, that if the different tribes, if the different Shvatim would know what the future held for this area, so they would all fight over it. They would all want to claim it for themselves. And therefore we had to wait until there was a melech in place, until there was a government in place that could then formally inaugurate Yerushalayim. And of course, many of these themes we see coming into play, not only in ancient history, but in modern history. And again, this is a theme that's very resonant in our current perspective. The imagery that we find of Yerushalayim very often draws on the imagery of a mother. And if we feel that our connection to Yerushalayim is one that's perhaps sometimes seems more emotional than anything else, so that's the way it's meant to be. We're meant to feel towards Yerushalayim like it's our mother. Rav Bakshi Daron, who was the chief rabbi, the Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel previously, has a lengthy essay about this. It's printed in his Shuvas Binyan Sion. It goes through many different references where sometimes the focus is on Sion, but we see from the context it's really more specifically a reference to Yerushalayim itself. We find it in the Sheva Brachos, Mesameach Tzion B'vaneha. We find it throughout Tanakh, throughout the literature, that there is a mentality, that there is a relationship, that we look to Yerushalayim like it's our mother, and therefore it's a bond of gratitude, but it's also a bond of emotional connection that's going to transcend all kinds of other considerations, that's going to go above and beyond anything we can really explain in words, and it's going to tie us in an absolute way that we can't ignore. And in one sense, you could say that any city has the perspective of a mother, you know, the motherland, the hometown, if you're born there. And the Talmud goes out of its way to explain that the imagery of mother, the Gemara Maseches Ksubas tells us that the imagery of a mother is not only to people who were born there, but says the Gemara Echara, who were Echara Noldim Sham, though one applies to people who were born there, but also Hamitzap and Larosa, also those who await to see it, those who look forward to coming back, those who were never born there physically, but look forward to its reuniting. So that's also a relationship of mother to a child, and therefore our emotional connection again is going to transcend anything else. The attitude that we have is that in addition to Yerushalayim representing our parent, Yerushalayim represents the center of the world, Eretz Yisrael represents the center of the world, and Yerushalayim represents the center of Eretz Yisrael, the center of the center of the world. And we find this in many different contexts. Talmud suggests that it means it literally. This is literally the central point geographically of the entire planet. It's the part that connects the whole world together and connects all the Jewish people together. Irsha chubra lo yachdav, say Chazal, that it's the place that makes all Yisrael chaverim, that makes us all join together, that makes us all into one unit. And we find that it's the center of the world as far as our thoughts. And we know that when we daven, the Talmud tells us that we're obligated to preferably face directly towards Yerushalayim. And if we're incapable of facing Yerushalayim for whatever reason, then we have to have the mindset to have the intent of thinking towards Yerushalayim. So whether it's actually or whether it's mentally, so we have Yerushalayim at the center of our attention as we daven. And we find for various halachic considerations also that we start from Yerushalayim as a central point as far as figuring out some basic halachic issues. If you're familiar a little bit with the very complicated issue of the halachic dateline, of the question of where do you set the point at which the day switches, a very thorny halachic issue, in which there are at least two or three major opinions, a few other opinions, but the two strongest, the two most prominent opinions, both work off the opinion that Yerushalayim is the center of the world. And then the question is, do you count 90 degrees from Yerushalayim or do you count 180 degrees from Yerushalayim? We're both working off this central idea that Yerushalayim is the center of everything, and then for the purpose of this very basic halachic issue, we make calculations based on that point that Yerushalayim is where everything is based upon. So working with that perspective, it's not our context to go through the history of Yerushalayim in a practical sense, but we know that we believe that Yerushalayim is endowed with a Kedusha, and is endowed with a holiness, and this holiness is tied in with Jewish history from the very beginning. It goes back at least as far as Avram Avinu, performing the ultimate show of obedience and show of Avodas Hashem, when he did the Akedas Yitzchak on Har Moriah, and he sanctified the mountain, he sanctified that location that would be the Har HaBayis at that point. I say at least because there are some who believe it goes back even further. The Maharam Shik, in his Sefer HaMitzvahs, Maharam Shik was a prominent student of the Chassam Sofer, and he wrote the Sefer Shailos and Tshuvos, and he also wrote a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs. So in the Sefer HaMitzvahs he writes that Yerushalayim was sanctified from the Sheshes Yimei Bereshis. I don't know exactly where his source is, but he traces it back not only to Jewish history, but to world history. But certainly within the history of our nation, it goes back to Avram Avinu, and then it's re-sanctified through David HaMelech's uniting of the city, what the Rishonim tell us, that the two halves of the city, Yeru and Shalem, an upper section and a lower section, and he connected the two, he brought the two halves together, and our history goes back all that way, and through all these major points, throughout these milestones in our history, the holiness of Yerushalayim has been a marker for all the major points of our existence as a nation. So this question of the holiness of Yerushalayim is one of the points that's often mentioned when we consider this question. If we would consider dividing up Yerushalayim, if we would consider changing the character of Yerushalayim in any way, so one question that's brought up is the issue of holiness. Does the holiness of Yerushalayim continue to maintain in its same form? And this was a topic of debate among the Rishonim. Most well known is the debate between the Rambam and the Ravid. That the Rambam writes in Hilchos Beis HaBechira that the status of Yerushalayim is distinct from the status of Eretz Yisrael. That the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael as a whole may not necessarily apply today in the same way that it did, but that's not the case for Yerushalayim. That Yerushalayim has its own independent sanctity that's separate from the rules of what creates a sanctity for Eretz Yisrael as a whole. When it comes to the land of Israel, so the sanctity is created through, let's say, Kibush or Chazakah, through the land being conquered, the land being inhabited. Yerushalayim has its own story, says the Rambam, that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim comes from the Kedushas HaShchina. It comes from the Divine Presence. V'HaShchina Eina B'Tela. That's something that's not negated. And therefore, the prohibitions associated with the Har HaBayis continue to maintain in full force, including a prohibition of Kareis for inappropriate going on to the Har HaBayis, because, as the Rambam maintains, the Kedusha, the holiness of Yerushalayim, is in its full force. This is the opinion that's endorsed by the Magen Avraham, so it's certainly a very authoritative halachic voice. It's something that we have to reckon with very seriously. It's a little bit of a discussion in the Achronim what that means when the Rambam says the Shechinah ain't a b'teilah. By Shlomo Worm and Shlita and others have an essay about this, that on the surface it doesn't seem to be accurate, that we don't necessarily assume that the Shechinah maintains its presence indefinitely. And if we believe that there was a Galus, we believe there's a Tisha B'Av, so the theme of Tisha B'Av is that the Shechinah left, that the Shechinah did not maintain its presence within the Jewish people, and that we mourn that fact that the Shechinah left us. So it's not necessarily clear that the Rambam means to say that the Shechinah itself continues to maintain a presence in that same sense, but that the sanctity that comes from the Shechinah's presence, that sanctity is one that we can't so easily dismiss. That sanctity is one that maintains, and apparently we'd have to read it that the Kedusha that comes from the Shechinah ain't a b'teila. That Shechinah is not gonna, that Kedusha is not gonna go away. And other Rishonim didn't necessarily see it that way. The Ravid has a different view. The Ravid maintains that the Kedusha was not meant to be permanent. The Kedusha that was associated with the time of Ezra was not a permanent Kedusha. He knew that there would later be a greater Kedusha, and therefore that Kedusha was temporary, and the Kedusha ended with the Galus. It expired, essentially. And therefore, what exactly that means is not clear. The Ravid has a very mysterious phrase that he ends off, therefore, somebody who's going to go on to the Har HaBayis, ain't bo kareis. He doesn't have a punishment of kareis. It's not clear what that means. Does that mean that it's permissible? Does that mean that it's considered like anything else? It's not exactly clear. It's a topic of a lot of discussion. To add to the mystery a little bit, the Ravid has a phrase there, sod Hashem l'reyav, that God's secrets are revealed to those who fear Him. He's indicating that He has a non-conventional source as far as His understanding of this topic. So we don't understand everything about what He says, but essentially what the Ravid is telling us is that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim does not maintain today in the same way, apparently because it was expired. Because it was not meant to be permanent at that time, and it's not currently in force. There are other Rishonim, which is the Ramban and the Ritva, I think they're here on the Mar Makomos, who also understood that the Kedusha is not currently active. They have a different angle. But in their understanding, this is based on the principle of the Gemara Maseches and Vodazara, Darshas from the Pasuk, Uvalvo Fritzin the Chiluha, that when the invaders came into Yerushalayim, came into the Beis HaMikdash, so the act of the invasion negated the sanctity. It canceled the Kedusha because it became profaned by the invasion. And therefore, the suggestion is a little bit different than the Ravid. It's not that the Kedusha automatically expired, that it wasn't meant to be permanent, but that the Kedusha was canceled, that it was invaded, it was taken away by the consequence of this invasion. And therefore, right now, we don't have a Kedusha associated with that area in the same sense. So that, using that reason, might be very significant. It's also interesting to note that the Chassam Sofer and his Tshuvas, he understands that that was actually the Ravid's reason too. In which case, it's not really three different opinions, it's really two opinions, that really the Ravid is the same as these Rishonim. But if we focus on this reason, that the Kedusha was cancelled by the consequence of the invasion, so that could make a big difference. That could affect the current equation very significantly. Rav Avidan, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Shalvim, has a sefer on the laws of Mochama called Masa Bahar, and he writes in that sefer that many Achronim took the view that, quotes for example, the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak of Rav Yitzchak Shmalkes, that if we use the idea of Avov Afitzim Chaluluha, then once the invaders leave, then the Kedusha can be restored. It's only as long as we're in a state of external occupation that the Kedusha is cancelled, but if that situation is reversed, so then the Kedusha comes back. So then that becomes a very significant point, that if we focus on that reason, then in theory, the reality of Jewish control over this area might reverse that, might restore the Kedusha. Now one could raise the point that the presence is not ended. There's still a mosque in the Har HaBayis, there's still clearly a physical presence. That may not necessarily be the defining issue. He points out there a comment based on the Yerushalmi and Maseches Demai that as long as those who are there are paying taxes to a Jewish government, that that's also considered to be Jewish control over the area, and therefore that may indeed constitute a reversion to its original state, and it may indeed involve a restoration of the Kedusha of that area. So therefore that leaves us with a couple of very solid reasons to believe that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim could continue to exist today, either if we believe, like the Rambam, which again the Magen Avraham endorses the halacha, that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim never left, or if we take the view of those who say that the Kedusha wasn't there only as a consequence of the invaders, so then if Jews have control over that area, there is room to say that that situation may theoretically be reversed. So that would refer, again, to these areas that are historically Yerushalayim. The area that we know as the Ir HaAtika, more or less, there have been differences throughout history, and this is not the place to go into the exact maps, but for the most part, what we understand is the old city of Yerushalayim is subject to that discussion. That's where the Kedusha would maintain. And we know that the Kedusha is not going to necessarily be associated with the areas outside of the Ir HaAtika. Well, is it possible to increase the area? Is it possible to add on to what's known as Yerushalayim in terms of Kedusha? So it's clear from the Gemara that it is possible. It's clear from the Gemara that the boundaries of holy Yerushalayim are not set in stone. You know, we have the ability to add on to it. The problem is, it's quite a daunting task. Mishnayos tell us in Shavuos, Mishnah in the beginning of Sanhedrin alludes to this also, but that in order to add on to Yerushalayim, so we would require a whole list of things. We would require a melech, we would require a navi, we'd require a Sanhedrin of 71, we'd require two todos, a shir, a whole long list of items. And in theory, if all of those items were in place, then we could add on to Yerushalayim. The Rambam writes that Yerushalayim could be infinitely added on to, there's no limit. The Azari says that has a limit. The Azari could only extend to the area of the Har HaBayis. Not everyone agreed with that limitation. The Kiryas Sefer and others didn't understand why there had to be any limitation. Why couldn't you make the Azari as big as you want also? So the Or Sameach has a comment that perhaps this goes back to Avram, that the Har has to be the location of the Azari. It can't go beyond the Har. But Yerushalayim itself, the Kedushas Yerushalayim, it seems, could go without limits. Seems could go as far as you want to make it. But again, you would have to have those conditions in place. You have to have all of these different aspects together in order to do that, and that's clearly something that we don't have nowadays. Even though it is a debate in the Gemara has two possibilities. Is it that you need all of these things, or is it that you need any one of these things? So if you maintain you need all these things, so certainly we have nowhere to start. If you maintain you need only one of these things, it's still pretty daunting. It's not clear that we would have any one of these things nowadays. The only possible aspect we could talk about maybe is the aspect of a melech, that if we assume that you could have a state of melech even without the geula, which certainly is a possible discussion, but even if you want to take it that far, even if you want to say that the current government has a status of melech, which maybe is what to talk about, but, sorry? It's hard to imagine, but even if you want to say that the democratic, whatever you want to define it, the head of the state, has the status of melech, even if you want to go that far, so then you would have to assume, or if you want to say that the government is empowered in the role of a melech in any context, still you would have to assume that the additions that they made onto Yerushalayim were done with the intent of increasing the Kedusha. And that's clearly not the intent. No one ever had in mind that we want to extend the sanctity of Jerusalem for that purpose. And therefore, whatever is labeled Jerusalem, it's pretty close to impossible to believe that that was endowed with the sanctity of Yerushalayim. That's how Rav Shlomo Zalman writes in a letter that was printed in Tchumen, that all of these extra areas have no Kedusha to Yerushalayim, and that's not something that's so controversial. So whether or not, if Kedusha is the issue, if we're worried about sanctity, so then it would seem that sanctity is something that very likely does apply to the area of the Old City, and it's very hard to see it applying to anything added on to that. Hi. The boundary is a little bit imprecise as far as, I don't want to say it's exactly, I think it's gone back and forth over the course of the year, but roughly speaking, what we're talking about associated with the classical Old City, that's what we'd be roughly referring to. There are other issues, though, to consider beyond Kedusha. Kedusha is not the only issue. Another issue that's really focused on the Old City is the Gemara has an expression in many places that Yerushalayim lo nitzchalka l'shvatim, that Yerushalayim was not divided up among the tribes, which in essence, l'havdil, it's like you have Washington, D.C., so the capital of the United States is not associated with any state, it's not part of any other state, it stands independently. And so too, Yerushalayim, the Gemara tells us in a couple of places, Yerushalayim has its own status, it's not given out to any of the 12 Shvatim, it stands separate from all that. And that's a halachic concept, which affects a number of things. Perhaps most strikingly, it affects the idea that one's really not permitted to charge rent in the Old City. Many Rishonim believe that this was only true during the time of Aliyah L'Regel. The idea being that when everyone, all the Jews would come to Yerushalayim for the purposes of Aliyah L'Regel, so it's not fair for the people who live there to say, well, we're going to charge all these people rent and we're going to make a huge killing off of them, because it's not really theirs. This belongs to the whole Jewish nation as a whole, and therefore they don't have the right to try to make a profit off the obligation of everyone to come for the Aliyah L'Regel. So it may be that it was only true during that time, but this is an idea that many Rishonim have, that charging rent there is a problem because of lo nischalka l'shvatim. And this affects a number of other halachas that we wouldn't necessarily guess. We don't always think about these halachas, but halachas that Chazal tell us, based on psukim, are connected to ownership, connected to individual ownership. So again, these are not things we'd necessarily guess, but things like egla rufa, or things like the bayis hamnuga that we read about a few weeks ago, the idea that if your house suddenly develops tzaras, so then the consequences that are associated with that don't apply within Yerushalayim. The idea that a city can become an ir hanidachas, that a city can become totally committed to avodah zarah, God forbid. But all of these halachas are not associated with Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim is separate from all this. Yerushalayim is not given over to any individual connection, any individual ownership. So what exactly does that mean? So Rabbi Norman Lam, many years ago, spoke about this really in a very similar context. There's a journal called Torah Sheval Peh, which records all of the shiurim that are given at the Kinos Torah Sheval Peh. Torah Sheval Peh has these gatherings that primarily take place in Yerushalayim. and they bring many people together who give drashas and give halachic discourses, and they're then printed in the journal. And a number of years ago, during a time when, again, the status of Yerushalayim was very much at stake, so they had a kinnus in New York on the topic of Yerushalayim, in order to kind of again make the same point that we're discussing today, that the attention should be paid to Yerushalayim at the time when the world's attention is on it in whatever sense. And Rabbi Lam drew on this sugya very much for this point, that the notion of Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim has tremendous consequence for considering the question, what rights do we have over Yerushalayim? What rights does anyone have as far as making decisions over Yerushalayim itself, if we believe that there's no independent control over Yerushalayim? And as he explains there, there's essentially two ways to understand that concept. Essentially, we can understand it either as Yerushalayim is essentially communal property, it's the property of the nation of Israel as a whole, and no individual has any type of personal ownership. Or we could see it as a type of partnership, where basically every individual within the Jewish people, so to speak, owns Yerushalayim together as a partnership. Either way, it essentially boils down to the same thing. Either none of us have a say, or we all can veto everyone else's say. But in any event, the control, so to speak, and the ability to make decisions over Yerushalayim is radically different than any other area, even within the land of Israel. And this may also manifest itself. There is a discussion when we look at the concept of priorities in tzedakah. We know we have a principle. We have to decide who to give tzedakah to. So there is an idea, aniyei ircha kodmim. Chazal tell us that we have to focus first on those who are closest to us, and those who are in our immediate vicinity. And then the poskim say, based on the midrashim, that after we are alongside this concern, so then there's the issue of aniyei Eretz Yisrael, that the poor who live in Eretz Yisrael are also high up on our list. And it's a debate among the poskim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch whether one comes first or the other comes first. Do we say that aniyei Eretz Yisrael take priority even over aniyei Ircha, or do we assume no, this is the way many poskim understood that that's not true, that aniyei Ircha is really what comes first and aniyei Eretz Yisrael is after aniyei Ircha. I remember I discussed this once with Rabbi Zvulun Chalap Shlita, who suggested that maybe the nature of the global village is such that those poskim who believe that aniyei Eretz Yisrael comes first have a little bit more to be based on. Because nowadays, the fact that we can communicate with anyone in a moment, and that you can email all around the world, and you can send money all around the world, kind of weakens the connection to the people who are geographically closer to you and strengthens the connection to people all around the world. So the question of whether aniyei Eretz Yisrael comes before aniyei Ircha or the other way around is a topic that continues to be debated. But within that, there were some who suggest, and this is not an idea that you find in Chazal, but it's an idea that you find later, and the Tshuvas Chacham Sofer and the Torah Tamima wrote this independently, that maybe within Eretz Yisrael, so aniyei Yerushalayim take priority, that aniyei Yerushalayim come first. And not everyone agreed with this idea. It's a controversial concept. The Rav Osner has a tshuva in which he says that if that were the case, even if one were to take this view, then one would have to say it's only true about the Ir HaAtika, because that's where the Kedusha is located, and the rest of Yerushalayim doesn't have a status of Kedusha. But the question is this idea based on Kedusha? It may be based on the idea that we have a sense of involvement in Yerushalayim, however we define it, that becomes a part of our identity, and therefore all of the Jewish people, so to speak, live in Yerushalayim. Even if you live in Teaneck or you live in the Five Towns, you still, so to speak, live in Yerushalayim in that sense, in the sense that our interest in Yerushalayim is at least rivals our interest in wherever we happen to live, and therefore we have a stake in it. So therefore, maybe there is a reason to see Yerushalayim as unique as far as our priorities and stuff, and that again was a topic of debate.
When you say you're at the
I'm trying to stay away from specific definitions because there are some variables. But for the most part, we'll speak in rough terms. The area that's classically known as Old Yerushalayim, as opposed to the areas that are more obviously not. Some of the specifics I want to try to avoid, but the areas that are clearly additional, that's what I'm trying to separate from. To go into the specific. Right. Correct. Sorry?
The purpose of the Kodim Pesach. What would you do to find Yerushalayim?
So then we would have to go with the Kedusha Yudah definitions, and that for sure would have to be the case.
That most of Yerushalayim
would not fall into that definition. Right. But our question is that the only issue when talking about questions as far as the status of Yerushalayim? Is Kedusha the only point, or are there also questions that may go beyond Kedusha that may also be a significant part of the issue? Rabbi Schechter in his Sefer Mikveh Hatzot points out, and this is a very important idea to keep in mind, that the centrality of Yerushalayim within Jewish thought is really based on two separate identities. On the one hand, it's the Ir HaKodesh VaHamikdash. That was the title of a Sefer by Rabbi Chiel Mechel Tukachinsky, author of the famous work Gesher HaChayim and Hilchos Avelos and a number of other important Svarim. So he has a multi-volume work on Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh VaHamikdash. And that phrase represents the idea that Yerushalayim has a sanctity as an extension of it being the home of the Beis HaMikdash, and being the center of the sanctity of the Jewish people, and by proximity, areas outside the Beis HaMikdash also draw upon a certain Kedusha for that purpose. So that's one of the roles that Yerushalayim has. Yerushalayim has the role of this center of all sanctity in the world. But at the same time, there's a parallel role which really has its own terms. And that's the phrase has this pasuk in Tehillim, Kiryas Melech Rav, that it is the city of the great king, that Yerushalayim is the political capital of the kingdom of God, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's political center, as represented by his agents on earth, is also Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim has this dual role, both sanctity dependent and politically dependent, politically in the sense of executing the will of God's government, so to speak. And both roles are significant, and the obligation, for example, there's many details about this that we won't go into, but the obligation of Kriya that's associated with the idea of Churban Yerushalayim relates in a sense to both. It may have different details, relates in a sense to the loss of Kedusha, or the degradation of Kedusha, and relates also to the lack of a political hold, and both of these have their own role as far as defining that obligation. So it's interesting to note, there is a Gemara in Masechet Shavuos, the Gemara discusses there in the second parak, that by Yerushalayim, by the outskirts of Yerushalayim, there were these two marshes. There was an upper marsh and a lower marsh. And the Gemara says that the lower marsh had full Kedusha to Yerushalayim, and the upper marsh did not. But nonetheless, they were both called Yerushalayim. It was all called part of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says this was confusing. The fact that there were parts of Yerushalayim that were not sanctified, but were still included in what was termed Yerushalayim, created a reality where people would make mistakes. People would eat kachim inappropriately, people wouldn't really understand what they could do where, because of the fact that we were calling non-sanctified areas Yerushalayim. So why did they do this? Why did Chazal let this happen? Why did they let parts be called Yerushalayim if it wasn't holy? So the Gemara says, because that part that they were calling Yerushalayim was more exposed, and it could be more easily conquered, so therefore it had to be labeled Yerushalayim so that the armies would fight for it, the armies would care about it. And that creates a very significant reality, which is very relevant to a modern day context, that we see the Talmud is clearly stating that there's one such thing as Kedushas Yerushalayim, there's one such thing as Sanctified Yerushalayim, and then beyond that, there's also an idea that there is political Yerushalayim, that there is an area that's also going to be labeled Jerusalem, and that's important too, and that's also Talmudically significant, that we recognize that in order for Yerushalayim to be protected, there has to be a buffer zone perhaps, there has to be an area which may not have all of the halachas vis-a-vis sanctity, but is still considered in our mentality part and parcel of Yerushalayim, so that we will care about it as much, so that we will be devoted as much to that area, even if it's not technically holy, and we will have that mind when we defend the area, we will have that mind in our understanding of Yerushalayim as a whole, the greater concept of Yerushalayim, and that's very much perhaps a forebearer of later additions to Yerushalayim, whether or not they have a connection to any actual Kedusha. It's also interesting to note that there are a number of other halachas that draw on defining Yerushalayim, which seem to be really independent of the area of Kedusha, that we find, again, not only for political usage, but for halachic usage, the concept Jerusalem, the concept Yerushalayim, could extend beyond any area that's at all considered to be Kadosh. And just to mention a few examples, so it's a discussion of the Piskei Tshuva as far as the writing of a get, as far as how you label the city when you write a bill of divorce, so you have to know what city you're in. So for that purpose, the definition of Yerushalayim is not necessarily connected to any definition of Kedusha. We also find, for example, the halacha of the reading of the Megillah, which is also a controversial issue, but we know that in Yerushalayim, so the Megillah is supposed to be read on the 15th of Adar as opposed to the 14th, giving us a lot to talk about this year because it was Purim Mishulash, so 15th falls out on Shabbos, you're not able to read the Megillah on Shabbos. How exactly you handle that is itself a topic of big discussion. So on top of that, you could also discuss what areas are considered to be Yerushalayim. So the Gemara already says that there's a concept of Samach and there's a concept of Nira, that there are areas that are close to Yerushalayim which are included, and then there are areas that can be seen from Yerushalayim, that if they are visually included within Yerushalayim, that also becomes a part of that halacha. And the question of where you measure from is a big topic of debate. And perhaps the majority view is that we measure from municipal Jerusalem, that we don't necessarily see it as a topic of Kedushas Yerushalayim. And we view Jerusalem in the broader sense, above and beyond whatever area is considered to be holy. And this is very significant also, especially if you look at the idea that the Rishonim have, when the Rishonim, at the beginning of Maseches Megillah, discuss why it is that we have this halacha, why it is that we have a concept of what we call Shushan Purim. So there the Rishonim explained that really it's not about Yerushalayim, really it's about Shushan, that the distinction between how the miracles and how the events were perceived in Shushan, and different views in the Rishonim exactly how to explain this, but things happened in Shushan, let's say, a day later than outside of Shushan. So really the halacha was going to set aside Shushan. But as the Rishonim explained, that we want to give cover to Yerushalayim, we don't want Yerushalayim to be excluded from this special status, so we go back to Yehoshua ben Nun, and we include Yerushalayim in this as well. So the idea that the definition of Yerushalayim for that purpose, for the purposes again of our national attention, may not necessarily be bound by Kedushas Yerushalayim, but may see a broader view of Yerushalayim, becomes very significant. In addition, there's also a concept the Gemara discusses in Maseches Bava Kamma, that normally we have a rule that when somebody, Rahman al-Islam, passes away, so there's an obligation in the Torah that we're not supposed to wait too long, we're supposed to try to perform the funeral as soon as possible. We have to try to prevent what we call halalas ames. We don't want that the deceased should be left unburied for too long of a time. Mm-hmm. Now we normally have to balance various concerns, that we want that there should also be the kavod hames, that the family should be able to attend, that as many relatives as possible should be able to be present at the time, and that as many people who could theoretically be present at the funeral should be able to be there. So therefore, we're often balancing the considerations on the one hand of halanas ames with other issues of kavod hames. That on the one hand, halanas ames would tell us to perform the burial as soon as possible, and sometimes other aspects of kavod hames indicate that we should wait a little bit, indicate that we should try to balance that off another concern. But there is an attitude when it comes to Yerushalayim that we don't want to wait at all. And Yerushalayim, as you may be familiar with, the principle they have funerals at night. In America you can't do that. In Yerushalayim they have funerals at night. That the emphasis on halanas hames is much stronger. That side of the equation is given much more attention. And this is an idea that we find in Chazal, that ein malinim es hames for Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim we don't allow the mace to wait unburied. Which again is the halacha that really applies everywhere. It's the same concept that we have everywhere else, but clearly the balance is different. In Yerushalayim we have a much greater focus on that side of the equation rather than on whatever other considerations we would put. And Rashi explains over there, or doesn't explain, Rashi says in Bava Kamma that this is a tradition that doesn't have a clear reason. But others felt there was a reason. The Radbaz tied it to Kedusha. The Radbaz felt because of Tumas Mace, that therefore we don't want to allow that to linger any longer than necessary in the holy city of Yerushalayim. So therefore, strictly speaking, this would be something then that would be connected to sanctified Yerushalayim. But we find that by practice, this is extended to Jerusalem as a whole, to the broader Jerusalem. So again, we're not totally sure what this reason is, what the reason for this concern is, whether it's like the Radbaz says, a result of a concern for Tumah, or whether it's a sensitivity to something else, whether it's something we don't fully understand. But it's again instructive to note that we find this concern, at least as a matter of minig, at least as a matter of practice, extended not only to sanctified Yerushalayim, but as a concept referring to what is perceived as Yerushalayim, again, above and beyond the Yer HaAtikah, above and beyond that area. We also find that there is a din the Gemara tells us in the end of Maseches Ksubis, that HaKol Malin L'Eretz Yisrael, that if you have a couple, you have a married couple, and either the husband or the wife feels that they want to make Aliyah, they want to live in Eretz Yisrael, so they have the upper hand. Whichever spouse decides that they want to move to Eretz Yisrael, they have the dominant hand in that situation, and they are allowed to force the other spouse to come with them, or to face the consequences. And then within that halacha, so there's also a halacha that within Eretz Yisrael, if a couple, let's say, lives in Haifa, so HaKol Malin LiYerushalayim, so either spouse that decides that they want to leave Haifa and move to Yerushalayim, so they again have the upper hand, the same way they would have had the upper hand if they wanted to make Aliyah from America. So here there is a discussion among many Achronim. Rabbi Yaakov Schlesinger in his Shuvah Shaul and Adarshan has a number of essays about this. Sternbach talks about this in his Sefer Ma'odim Muzmanim. And it seems to be generally understood that this is not the halacha in Kedushas Yerushalayim, that this is not about the Yer HaAtikah, but that if somebody wants to move to Yerushalayim, whatever is defined as Yerushalayim, if somebody wants to move to Har Nof, somebody wants to move to Mea Shearim, so that will also take priority, that moving to modern-day Jerusalem, separate from any definition of Yer HaAtikah, would also acquire this halacha of HaKol Malin LiYerushalayim. And building off that idea, Rav Sternbach also discusses in his Sefer that whatever notion is a little bit undefined, but a notion that we find that the Gedolim have preferred to live in Yerushalayim, that people have felt that living in Yerushalayim has a special value to it, again, above and beyond living in Eretz Yisrael as a whole. So that special status, however we define it, is not tied down to the Yer HaAtikah, may come from proximity to the Beis HaMikdash, but doesn't necessarily revolve around being in an area that is itself sanctified, but that that whole area that's bound off as being the neighborhood of the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, all of Yerushalayim is the city of the Beis HaMikdash, even if it's not itself a sanctified area, and therefore living anywhere in that city would have this undefined quality. This quality of looking to live in Yerushalayim is not based on the old city, but is based on the current definition of Jerusalem above and beyond. So these are all reasons to perhaps look at Yerushalayim in a little bit of a different sense, again, not only in the areas that are sanctified, but even in the areas that are, according to everyone, not sanctified. There's perhaps one more point to mention, the point that a number of Svarim emphasize. There's a Sefer, a couple of Svarim that deal with Yerushalayim as a whole talk about this notion. Rav Zevin talks about this in his essay, and it was printed in the Sefer Or HaAlacha, that Chazal have an attitude that Yerushalayim will ultimately expand tremendously. That whatever is called Yerushalayim now is just a tip of the iceberg, and that ultimately Yerushalayim is going to become much, much wider. If not the whole world, it's going to become much, much wider. And as Rav Zevin points out, it's not at all clear from those statements that Yerushalayim, that becomes the broader Yerushalayim, are necessarily going to have the sanctity of Yerushalayim. There's nothing in these statements that necessarily says that Kedushas Yerushalayim is going to extend. But the municipal definition of Yerushalayim is going to extend far beyond where it is now, and that that itself is a symbol of the Geula. That itself is a harbinger of the ultimate redemption. So therefore, one could make a case that the areas that are already labeled Jerusalem, whether or not they have any type of sanctity, so that, so to speak, is marked for expansion. That, so to speak, is labeled as future construction, so to speak, for the Geula. And any retreat, any taking away from that, has tremendous consequences as far as morale, as far as our view towards the Geula, as far as where we're holding vis-a-vis redemption. It's a very powerful notion, which is something to keep in mind. Again, what decision you make on that point is not for us to say, but to have that mentality, to have that awareness, is something else that we incorporate into our mentality, something that we incorporate in our perspective towards the Drishas Yerushalayim. Perhaps?
Yeah,
Perhaps, you know, that's anything that's marked as Yerushalayim, it's as if you have the blueprints, it's as if you have your house. The house isn't built yet, but you have your blueprints, you have a sign out there that says future site, you know, that says we're building here, so there's a mentality that I'm on my way. And if I would take down a sign, if I would take down a sign that says future site, or if I would throw away the blueprints, that would be tremendously depressing, that would be tremendously demoralizing. So too, the areas that we call Jerusalem today are, in that sense, marked as symbols of the Gula, and to move away from that has its own consequences. So we're almost out of time, just to maybe quickly relook at, to review some of the points that we spoke about. So we spoke about the idea of Tzion and Dorish Law. The Talmud tells us that there's a requirement of Drisha Tzion, and we suggested Alpi Derech HaDrush, that maybe the idea is that looking into some of the halachic character of Yerushalayim is an expression of our sensitivity, expression of our care for Yerushalayim, especially at a time when its status is under question. It behooves us this week of Yom HaAtzmaut to pay close attention to some of the halachic characters of Yerushalayim as a whole. And we talked about the fact that Yerushalayim is not identified in Chumash, even though it's mentioned 650 times at least in Tanakh. Now, we mentioned the Rambam's three reasons for that, that we don't want the nations of the world to realize what's going on and keep us out. We don't want them to realize what's going on and take it over or destroy it. And we didn't want the Shvatim of Yisrael to fight over it before it was decided. And all of this is certainly very resonant to us. We discussed the fact that our connection to Yerushalayim is emotional, perhaps even more than anything else, and that's the way it's meant to be because of the constant imagery of a mother. We find in the literature that Yerushalayim is our parent, and as the Gemara goes out of its way to say, this is true not only of people who are born there, but people who are Mitzapim Larosa, people who wait to see it, people who wait to be reunited with it, have the status of a child towards a parent. And then we talked a little bit about this concept of Yerushalayim being the center of the world and the different senses in which we find that. We find that it's considered to be true literally. It's the actual center of the world. It's the point that connects all of the Jews of the world. We find that it's the center of our attention, that when we daven, when we pray, we have it in mind. At every simcha, of course, we have it in mind. And that for halachic calculations, we find that, for example, in the context of figuring out where the international dayline is, we work off the premise that Yerushalayim is the center, and the machlokas revolves around how we understand that concept of the centrality of Yerushalayim. And then we discuss the fact that the question of the Kedushas Yerushalayim has always been associated with the history of the Jewish people, going back at least to the Akedah and Har Maria, and perhaps going back even to Sheikh Shmei Bereshis, like Maram Shik says, but certainly going through the Malchus of Beis David, and all of the markers in our history have been associated with Kedushas Yerushalayim. And then the question of the status of Kedushas Yerushalayim nowadays, Machlokas among the Rishonim, the fact that the Rambam said that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim maintains because Hashchina Eina B'Teila, that was the view adopted by the Magen Avraham, certainly an authoritative force. We'll discuss a little bit the question, is that actually the case, that the Shekhinah never leaves? Isn't that what the whole Golos is about? And perhaps what the Rambam means is that the Kedusha that comes from the Shekhinah is not the Tehillah, even if the Shekhinah doesn't maintain its presence. And while the Ravid disagreed, the Ravid felt that the Kedusha of Ezra was temporary, and that right now, Ein Bo Karis, whatever that means, and again, Sod Hashem L'Reyev, whatever that means, and then we mentioned the third view in Rishonim that the Kedusha was cancelled because of Vav Ofritzim V'Chalaluha. The Chassam Sofer understood that was the Ravid's opinion as well. And then as Rav Avidan pointed out, that may have consequences then, because perhaps if that situation is reversed, the Kedusha might come back. And even though the non-Jewish presence maintains on Har HaBayis, but if they're paying taxes to the Jewish government, that may also have a status of reversing the situation of Vav Ofritzim, and that may have its own significance. And then we talked about the question of expanding Yerushalayim, what we find in the Mishnayos and Shuas and the Mishnayos and Sanhedrin. It requires a whole list of requirements. There has to be a Melech and a Navi and a Sanhedrin and two Todos and a Shir. And so certainly we don't have that nowadays. And even if we take the opinion that you could have one of these, it would still be challenging. The Rambam says in theory Yerushalayim can be expanded infinitely and the Azara can only be expanded to the Har HaBayis. Some don't even agree with that limitation. So, but either way, we don't have the ability to do that. Even if we were to stretch it to say that we do have a melech, maybe if we say we have one of the things, and if we were to take the opinion of the Gemara that it has to only be one of these and not all of these, still it would be very questionable if this ever happened, because no one had the intent to expand the sanctity of Yerushalayim, so there's really very little reason to assume Kedushah of Yerushalayim has ever been expanded. As Shlomo Zalman writes in his letter, there's no Kedushah to any of these areas. But there are other issues as well besides Kedushah. And we talked about the concept of Yerushalayim lo neschalka l'shvatim, the idea that we don't have the ability to ever divide up Yerushalayim, even among the Jewish people. And that has a consequence for the question of charging rent in the Old City, which maybe is only true during the time of Aliyah LeRegel, and the question of Yerani Dachas and Agla Rufa and Bayis HaMenuga, certain halachas that don't apply to Yerushalayim because it doesn't have its own independent status to be divided up. And we mentioned Rabbi Lam's speech about this in the Kinos Torah Shabbat Peh, again to make this point, that whether we understand this to mean that we are all joint owners of Yerushalayim or it's all a partnership ownership of Yerushalayim, either way, our ability to make decisions about this area is limited and is different than even other areas within Eretz Yisrael. And then we talked about some other concepts that might be relevant. We talked about the question of whether there's a preference on Hilchos Tzedakah of Aniyei Yerushalayim even over other Aniyei Eretz Yisrael. The Chasam Sofer's position on this, and the Torah Tumah has this idea as well, and how Rav Lesner suggested that would only be true about Yerah Atikah. We mentioned that maybe not, maybe it's about our role as global citizens of Yerushalayim, which may have a different attitude and may dictate different rules. And then we talked about the fact that, as Rav Schechter points out in Bekvei Hatzon, that there are two distinct roles that Yerushalayim plays as the center of the Jewish people. One is the center of Yirah HaKadosh HaMikdash, and the other is the Kiryas Malach Rav, is the political capital of the Jewish people, and each may have its own rules, and that may affect Hilchos Kriya in their own way. And we mentioned the Gemara in Shavuos that says that there were areas of Yerushalayim that were not sanctified, but were still called Yerushalayim intentionally, because that made the armies be ready to go to a greater effort to protect them, and that shows us that we don't want to have parts of Yerushalayim that may not have Kedusha to Yerushalayim, but are still considered in our mentality to be part of Yerushalayim, so that we will give them the proper Mesiras Nefesh, and then we will have that type of commitment to them. And then we talked about other halachas which may define Yerushalayim in the broader sense of Ben Yerah Atikah, separate from Kedusha. We talked about the question of how you define Yerushalayim for the purposes of a get. We talked about the question of how you define Yerushalayim for the purposes of reading the Megillah on the 15th, for the purposes of the halach and the Gemara that we don't in Malinus Ameis, that we may get to funerals as quickly as possible, and the minig that applies even beyond Yerah Atikah. And then the fact that the Mishnah says that HaKol Malon the Yerushalayim, that everyone has every member of a marriage has the upper hand as far as moving to Yerushalayim, and the postman understanding it's not about Yerah Atikah, that's about the whole city of Jerusalem. And that Rav Shnerbach points out that even this idea that we have that there's a special quality to live in Yerushalayim, it's not about Yerah Atikah, that's about the whole municipal Jerusalem. And then we just closed on this idea that Chazal had, that there is a future in which Yerushalayim will be expanded, and Yerushalayim is going to be much, much wider than its current boundaries. And as Rav Zeva notes, it's not necessarily clear that it has anything to do with Kedusha. We don't know at all that Kedusha will be expanded, but the city of Yerushalayim will be expanded, and therefore the areas that are already called Yerushalayim is as if we have the blueprints, as if we have a sign up there about this is the future site, and therefore any retreat from that has tremendous psychological and moral consequences. And this again is part of what we keep in mind, part of the attitude that we have, that we don't know what decisions are to be made, but that we at least want to focus our sensitivity, focus our action, and to rectify the issue that Sion in Doresh La, we look to be that Doresh, we look to have this mentality and sensitivity constantly. Thank you so much.